I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. The live show is available every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. Simply search for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. And now, on with the show.
So we always try to start out with non-spoilers, general impressions, things like that, in case any of you who haven't seen the episode don't want to be spoiled. We can just give you some of our impressions and things that we think about it, and then you can tune out for a while and you can come back during the news segment if you want. So, Dave, let's start out with you with general impressions for Star Trek Nepenthe, and I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Well, let's see. General impressions of the show. I liked this episode. I didn't love it. But I'd have to say it's probably one of the better episodes. When we get into the spoilers in a deep dive, I'll talk more about, you know, what it was about the episode that I didn't particularly care for. I really enjoyed, I think this is no spoiler. Anyone who's seen any of the trailers know that Riker and Troy is in this particular episode. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it. But I can't really get into the reasons for why until we actually get into the spoiler part of the conversation about this particular episode of Star Trek Picard. That's my overall impressions. I'd have to say, rating it against the other episodes, I'd have to say this one is probably up there with the premiere, but not quite there for me personally. So tell me, Eric, what did you think about this episode of Star Trek Picard?
I'm a little bit more in the middle. This episode obviously has gotten a lot of buzz. This isn't a spoiler, because if you don't know this, it's like you're not even interested in the show. this episode obviously was highly anticipated because we finally get to see Riker and Troy in the Star Trek Picard world and see what they've kind of been up to and all that good stuff. So it was highly anticipated because of that. I had a sort of mixed reaction to that homecoming. But one thing that I will say, and I don't think this is a spoiler, because I think people are wondering about this, especially people that are kind of like, should I watch this? Shouldn't I? I don't know how to feel about this. Maybe you didn't like the last episode, or you really hated episode 5 like I did. But the one thing that I will say is that it's nice that Riker and Troy aren't just a cameo. So that's something that I think a lot of people going into this will want to know, whether it's worth watching or not, is, hey, was this just a cameo? Are they, you know, that kind of thing? I won't say, you know, whether they lived or died, that I think would be a spoiler, or what the exact situation is until we get into the spoilers and the deep dive. But just for people wondering about that, it's not just a cameo. So they do feature prominently in the episode. Other than that, the other thing is, you know, I constantly harp on the issue that Picard is a little disjointed as a narrative. We've got like three different settings now going on with the characters. And I was actually really looking forward to the fact that, you know, in the last episode, we kind of were like, it looked like we were finally going to get everybody together. And that didn't happen. That didn't happen. And instead, we actually got a bigger separation, because before, Picard has always basically been like two storylines going on. One storyline is basically the story of Picard getting his crew together, kind of explaining who these people are, kind of setting the chess pieces, if you will. And the other one's all about Soji and the affair that she's having with this Zot Vash agent. Or she doesn't know it was a Zot Vash agent. And if you don't know what Zot Vash is, that's the Super Tal Shiar. So you've had these two storylines that are kind of, you know, happening separately. There's no real interaction between the two of them until episode 6. And so I was really looking forward to the fact that we kind of get everybody together, but that's not what happens. Now we have even more separation with the characters and weird things are going on. And for me, it really gives a very uneven tone to the episode. It's something that's kind of like a, you know, just straight up off-putting to me, because I don't, all these different narratives going on at the same time, it gets confusing. And then you have like wildly different tones. You know, we had one of our viewers talked about, you know, this is Star Trek, the bipolar frontier. And I really feel like that's the way that this episode is. It's like, it's just all over the place. You know, it goes into some really dark places. And it just seems like they are absolutely determined to make Star Trek Picard as like hopeless and as damaged and as neurotic as possible. So that's kind of where I'm at. Now, even with saying all that, it doesn't mean that I hated the episode. It's not on the same level as episode 5 in terms of being that bad. Well, I have to take that back, because there is a death of a major character in this episode. That's a little bit of a spoiler, but it's not, you don't know which one. There are multiple major characters in this show. So that might actually make you want to see it and say, well, who died? You know, that kind of a thing. I wasn't very happy about that, about the death. We'll get into that in the deep dive. But overall, I think Picard has a problem with having a focused narrative. Bobby just chimed in. Bobby, thank you for chiming in. He said, yep, this one was scattered. And literally, it's scattered. Says Katie. Oh, Katie, your comment as well. Says, I was talking to my mother, and she told me that she doesn't even really want to watch the show. To be honest, I understand. In her words, quote, everything is dark, death, no camaraderie, no final frontier. And Katie, that's kind of how I'm feeling about the show in a lot of ways myself. Now, I know that, Katie, that you might like the next episode just because of something that I saw in the preview. And we'll talk about that in the deep dive. You might be interested in the next episode. But like Bobby said, I feel like it very much is, you know, the scattered frontier, if you will. And that's kind of where I'm at right now.
So I guess since we're good there, I guess we should just go ahead and get into the spoiler talk. Because like I said, I quite liked a lot about this episode, but there were some things I did not like, but I can't really get into those too much in detail until we actually get into the deep dive spoiler conversation. For the people,
I think it's not really considered a spoiler to say this. Did you like the appearance of Riker and Troi? Did you feel like that story worked? Did you like it?
I did.
Okay.
I did. I have some problems with it, but I did like seeing them quite a bit.
Because I think a lot of people, that's what they really want to know. You know what I mean? They just, even if they haven't seen the episode, they want to know, well, were Troi and Riker treated well? Do they have like a satisfying story? I think that's something a lot of people want to know before they even watch the episode, before they even give the time of day.
I enjoyed seeing them. And I have some issues with it, but I did enjoy seeing them quite a bit. And that's kind of a big high point for me with this episode, was seeing them.
Do you think hardcore TNG fans are going to like what they did with Riker and Troi and the whole interaction? Do you think they're going to like that?
I am going to say it's probably going to be a mixed bag.
I'm going to agree with you there.
I could see where some people would just enjoy seeing them because it was great to see them kind of back at those characters. But at the same point, too, the fact that at some point, at one point I was expecting Riker to say something that was going to turn out they were on a holodeck, like a holodeck, and Nepenthe was actually a starship. For half a second, I thought he was going to, because when he said, well, I can't get into it until we get in spoiler conversation, but there was a point in which I thought when he started.
That's a good
saying,
segue. Let's get into spoilers there, okay. Because I didn't right. see that moment. And I'm curious what moment you're talking about, because I actually would have really liked that. That would have been awesome. That would have been freaking awesome.
Yeah. The moment I was thinking of is when he said shields up and the computer started responding, stuff started to happen. For half a second, I was like going, oh, shoot, this is all on a holodeck and they're on a starship. Nepenthe's a starship. And I was really excited for half a second. And I was like, this is going to be so cool. If they're actually on a starship, and this is their little house on the prairie simulation that they run for fun, because they want their daughter to know what it's like to live on Earth.
As Katie says, like everyone says, Troi Riker equals little house on Nepenthe.
Yeah, I tell you, like there was a point there where I was expecting for us to pull out
the shields up.
Yeah, I thought we were going to pull out. We were going to see some brand new, killer, awesome starship. It was going to turn out that Riker was still in command. This was his ship. And basically when Picard knew he needed help, he went to Riker, because not only did he know Riker was in a position to help him, but he knew he was his friend. You know what I mean? Like I really thought that Picard went there because he knew
I think we're gonna have to do. I'm gonna pitch this like live to you right now. I think at the end of this show, we should do like a special recap episode where we get some other people that are into, you know, creating content or writing, and we actually do our own Star Trek Picard writers room, and we talk about all the missed opportunities and all the things we would have done if we were in that writers room. I think that'd be fun because you come up with some great ideas, and that's an awesome idea. That would have been a great segue when you did the shields up, and all of a sudden you realize he's on a freaking ship. You know what I mean? Nepenthe isn't a planet. Nepenthe is a ship. You know what I mean? And, oh man, that makes me excited. Just talking about that makes me excited.
Could you imagine when he said that his shield's up, and then all of a sudden you pan back, you realize it's a starship, and you get the dun, 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 you know, like the classic theme, and it's this really killer, brand new starship we've never seen before, and it says USS Nepenthe on the hull, and you realize this is Riker's ship.
That would have been awesome.
I would have freaking lost it. I would have freaking lost it, because you right then, for this show, it would have all of a sudden settled a bunch of things for me. You would have realized, okay, some of the next gen, the crew, they're still in service on Starfleet. They're important parts of the Federation, even if Picard decided, screw it, I'm leaving. Number two, you would have realized that Picard just went to the one person who was in such a position to help him, and it would have had echoes of all good things. You know, it's just Picard's in a different, not Picard, but Riker's in a different place. So instead of being distanced from everyone, you know, it would have been awesome. And when that didn't happen, I was like going, his house has got shields and it can scan for cloaks. Okay, well, he's going to protect his family. He's not active Starfleet. Okay. And then I had to kind of settle into my, well, this is, you know, Star Trek fan fiction written by people who love Star Wars again. That's kind of, I just found myself in that same boat. I wasn't in a starship. I'm just in that same boat. So, but I swear for half a second, I was like, oh, it's a starship. They're on a holodeck. That would be so cool. And then it didn't happen.
I think that would have been awesome. I really love that idea. It's a huge, huge missed opportunity there. We do have another comment on the chat here. Says Bobby Changewords, if only the fans of the show had a hand in the writing. It's almost like everyone has tried to change their style of writing. Everything has to be dark and shocking to be good. Thanks, Game of Thrones. Bobby, I actually really, you know, the funny thing is I really liked Game of Thrones, and I'm one of those people that really got pissed off at the last season. Although I saw the decline. Decline starts to happen probably around the fifth season, actually, in Game of Thrones. But they actually were running on fumes and actually came up with some decent ideas until the last season, which was just completely awful. So I do kind of also the you know, a lot of people have already been kind of noticing the whole incest vibe between the Zot Vash agents, between, you know, Soji's boyfriend and his sister, and that's totally a Game of Thrones thing. Like I'm just like, they're even calling her Cersei Romulan. People are calling her Cersei Romulan, that character. Katie also had a comment, says I think she was reacting to our excitement and stuff. She said, totally, yes, heck, Dawes should have been Chakotay and Seven's daughter, blending Starfleet and a girl hunted because of her nanoprobe DNA. Oh, the possibilities. You know, I don't think that's necessarily a bad pitch, Katie. You know, I know you being a big advocate of the Chakotay-Seven relationship, which is not universally liked in Star Trek. A lot of fans don't like that relationship. I know Katie does. That could have been a real interesting storyline as well. You know what I mean? If Soji had been the daughter of Seven and Chakotay, and she was being hunted for her nanoprobes, just as Icheb was, and Icheb was murdered for his nanoprobes, you know, that I think that could have been an interesting idea too. Again, I really feel we need to do this recap when the truck art is over and talk about all the missed opportunities and all the things we would have done different if we had been in charge of the show, but we aren't. So all we can do is comment and kind of give you our two cents and what we think. But let's start at the beginning again. This one, again, does a flashback. There's a lot of flashbacks and dream sequences that start out these episodes. And in this one, we got Dave. This was like your favorite character, I think, for a while. We had the scientist from the Daystrom Institute. I never remember her name. The blonde. And we get to see why she killed Maddox, essentially. We get to see that Commodore, the Commodore sunglasses, Commodore sunglasses comes and talks to her. And she gives, apparently she is Vulcan. She gives her a mind meld and gives her a vision of what Soji is capable of, apparently, as the, right. the bringer of, what is it, the bringer of death or the death of the, I forgot what the term is that the crazy Romulan uses for her. The destroyer of worlds, right? That's what Soji and Dash apparently represent to the Zavosh, to the super Tel Shiar.
She's a destroyer. Keep going.
So the mind meld happens and it's so intense. We don't really get to see a whole lot of images. They go by really fast. So all we can basically see is like, it looks like people are dying and planets are exploding. And then she throws up, which I thought was like, okay, you know, that's all right, whatever. You know what I mean? So she throws up because it's so intense and she can't take it, right? And then she swallows a probe. She actually swallows a probe that apparently is chewable probe. Okay, whatever. So she chews this probe and that's how they're tracking them. That's how they can stay a step ahead of them. So, you know, we kind of knew that she was like a sleeper agent. We knew that when she killed Maddox, but now we find out why she killed Maddox. She has got this vision, you know. I'm kind of curious why she wouldn't kind of assume that maybe they're trying to trick her. You know what I mean? Like, why would she just assume that the vision is correct, especially when it's a vision and she's a scientist? And why wouldn't she question that at all? Why does she just go like, oh, okay, yeah, you know?
Right.
That doesn't really make sense with her character, considering that she is a scientist and she is somebody who was actually actively trying to develop synths and all that kind of stuff. I thought that was weird. And Katie comes in to always help me with the names. It's Angus Jurati and Romulan Commander O. And Katie adds Commander O. No. I like that.
Commodore O. No.
So anyway, that's how it starts. Then I can't remember. What was the next scene? Were we back with, we're not with Picard yet, are we? I can't even remember what the next scene was after that because it's so jumbled. That's the problem. Like so many different things are going on. I think they're trapped, right? They're back on the ship and they're trapped because the artifact, the Borg, disabled Borg ship is like got them in a tractor beam. And they're trying to get away.
They're trying to get away and the tractor beam is overloading all their systems. Meanwhile, I think inside the cube, they're trying to remember because there's that they're
well, what's happened on the cube mentally... well the cube is confusing because what's happened on the cube is last we saw Hugh and Elrond.
I remember that naming.
Otherwise known as Legolas. And Hugh were together. And you kind of assumed that he was going to, you know, that Elnor was going to, you know, save or protect Hugh because,
but he's gone. He's totally he's gone. Missing. And it's Hugh.
And Hugh has been captured.
Yeah. And they've got some of the XBs lined up. Katie apparently, just said it.
It sounds like it's like all of the XBs. That's the way it kind of came across. It was like, basically this is like it, you know? And it's funny because, you know, we had PJ on the show last week and we were talking about Hugh and what we thought might happen to Hugh or, you know, and I remember one of the things PJ said was that maybe the all those former Borg, the XBs, you know, they would help Hugh if he was in trouble, right? No, not on this show.
There's like four of them, I guess. Like I thought that too. I thought that's what was going to happen. I thought that, you know, Hugh and the XBs were going to basically stage a revolt and they were going to end up kicking the Romulans and the Zavosh or whatever off of the cube because Hugh showed us that he knew aspects and how to get to different parts of the cube that they didn't even know how to access. So I thought it was going to be one of those, you know, he was going to turn to the camera and be like, it's okay. They don't control this cube. We control this cube. And he put his hand up on the thing and you see the XBs doing stuff and the cube would start transforming the different things. And you would realize that, you know, the former Borg control that cube, not the Romulans.
That would have been so cool. That would have been so cool, man. I mean, I just, I can't believe all the missed opportunities they have just to go out of their way to make this as dark and depressing as they possibly can. And Katie mentioned, so Nerissa and Hugh killing XBs in front of Hugh, you know, so they kill all the XBs right in front of Hugh. He does nothing. You know what I mean? He's not going to betray Picard. At least that was good. He's not going to betray Picard. But they kill all the XBs. They don't do anything, which I'm just like, okay. I think they're taking the victimization of the Borg a little too far, because we've seen repatriated Borg, including Hugh. We've seen 7 of 9. We've seen Picard. We've seen all these people. Icheb, of course, Icheb was brutally murdered in a previous episode. We've seen how these people do adjust and even thrive after their time in the collective. But now they're just worthless. You know what I mean? So they're just cannon fodder. They're killed just to be shocking. They're killed right in front of Hugh to get him to reveal where Picard has gone. And then finally, Elnor shows up and tries to rescue him. But of course, our heroes can't rescue anybody. He fails miserably, and Hugh's killed anyway, almost as an afterthought. Yeah. Almost as an afterthought to that whole sequence. Hugh's just randomly killed by basically a knife that I think Elnor dodged. I don't think it was even intended for Hugh. I think he dodged it, and it just hit him in the neck. And of course, he's got this blood gushing out and everything like that. I was just like, what are these guys doing? You know, we talked earlier about our hopes for Hugh and him possibly joining the crew and being one of the crew and all that kind of stuff. And I think I can't imagine fans that didn't have the same feelings we did. And I feel so bad about, you know, Jonathan DeLarco has been pretty good. I've seen a lot of his Twitter and things like that. And I think he's done a really good job of sort of navigating this. He put a post out there where he said, hey guys, I don't write this stuff. Just so you know, I don't write this stuff. I was happy to work. I was happy to do the opportunity, but that's not my decision. It's not my decision to kill this character off, you know? I'm sure it's not his decision, because I'm sure we'd like to do more. You know, he seems to be really into it. I just thought that was another huge missed opportunity.
If I were writing this scene, I know Jonathan DeLarco is not watching, but if I had been writing that scene, you would have turned and grabbed that Romulan commander by the throat. You would have lifted her off her feet, and you would have said, you don't control this cube. We do. And then he would have said, resistance.
Oh, awesome. And that could even be
the
a little
Borg line.
But then you even have a little bit of darkness there, but there's still hope, right? So it's like the Borg are still kind of the Borg, you know what I mean? And they like, and they
see, that's
like
what I'm
they
talking
have
about. They're it's like they're not helpless. They're not helpless. They're recovering, you know, but they're like former, you know, they're PTSD, they're former warriors. They have been assimilating worlds. They're not these helpless sheep to be slaughtered. I didn't buy that for a minute.
Look how defiant 7 of 9 was when she was deborgified. How defiant she is in those first episodes of Voyager. And Katie mentioned, says, I am tired of the poor Borg storyline. I get it. Janeway got it. Picard even got it. But the Borg were evil. They purged everything from you. To victimize the collective is dumb and ridiculous. And I'll go a step beyond, because what I really hate is the original intention of the Borg as they were created was that they were supposed to be an unbeatable enemy. That was the pitch. I want to create an unbeatable enemy. And Roddenberry didn't create the Borg. It was one of the other producers who's actually very controversial who created the Borg. And that was his intention. His intention was an unbeatable foe. And I feel the Borg have been beaten up so bad from their original intention that they're becoming like unrecognizable. And Katie mentions, yes, where the heck is the resistance is futile? Gosh, this show. That would have been cool too. If Hugh, now see, then you can have a little bit of darkness mixed with the hope. If Hugh suddenly said something like that, resistance is futile to the Zot Vash, you know what I mean? Like, you think, again, like you were saying, like, you think you're in control? You think you're in control of this cube? No, you're not. You know what I mean? It doesn't work that way. Oh, man. Again, just a huge missed opportunity. Huge missed opportunity. So, of course, so now we have one storyline stuck on the cube with Elnor, which doesn't really go anywhere other than to get Hugh killed. That really never goes anywhere. We don't get any resolution. Elnor is just kind of stuck on the cube. Now, by himself, because Hugh's dead. The XBs apparently are all dead. So he's just on the ship. So that's one storyline. That's what I'm talking about, the scatteredness, the disjointedness of the show. Then we have the crew members that are still on the ship, the ones that are trying to get away, we can see that Agnes, right? Agnes is her name. She's starting to kind of fall to pieces because of the guilt of murdering Maddox and all that kind of stuff. She's basically also, like, let's just, what's that?
But also too, she knows that them trying to run is stupid because she's got that tracking thing basically in her
blood. There's no point.
So there's nowhere they can go because like going, he found us again. And she's like sitting over there going, well, yeah, I know, but I can't tell you. She just wants, yeah, I know.
She just wants to go home at this point. At this point, she's just like, I've kind of done my duty. I killed Maddox. That was my role to play. And now I just want to go home. And so she's all falling to pieces and everything. You know, again, the disjointed nature and the tone problems. They have that scene where Raffi's like giving her cake and giving her chocolate milk, like she's 4 years old, and I'm your Aunt Raffi now. You know what I mean? Like my drug addicted Aunt Raffi. Yeah, okay, yeah. And she's on the vape pen and everything like that, and she's comforting her. And then of course we get another gratuitous throw up scene, and that one was gratuitous. Like she just hurls very graphically on the screen because you know she's going through all this guilt and all this angst and everything. So what ends up happening there is she tries to kill herself. That's the end of that storyline. She tries to kill herself. She's in a coma. I hope she doesn't recover. that's me, because she deserves to die. But they'll bring her back because, you know, why not? You know, she's funny. Well, she's quirky, you know?
But see, she's one of the new crew members, so they'll save her. Everybody else from the old cast is apparently expendable, but somehow she'll live because, you know, she's one of the new people.
I like this. Katie says, there's no such thing on planet Raffi. Remember that little line, that little cringe line. Yeah. so anyway, that's the end of that storyline. So we've got those two storylines. That's all that happens. Elnor just isn't effective. He's dead. The other one, the girl tries to kill herself. So the main thing that everybody wants is Riker, Troy, Picard, and Soji and all that kind of stuff. And right off the bat, I had some problems with the way that they did that whole storyline. I feel it was very forced into the rest of the narrative of the show. There's tons of evidence that says that's exactly what happened. Jonathan Frakes actually said when he was directing episodes 4 and 5, at that point, he did not know that right. He was going to be acting in this show. If you can believe that, he said that on the Ready Room. That's why I tell people, watch the Ready Room, because they let things slip out. They think are very casual and you're like, oh, that's like a bombshell. You know what I mean? The fact that you didn't know you were going to be in this show when you were directing it, two episodes before, and you didn't even know you were going to be on the show. They just jammed that in there. And that's how it feels to me. It feels like this part of the show doesn't really fit the rest of the show, other than they still kind of treat Picard like a senile old man. And I did not like that.
So
I don't like Picard being treated like a senile old man.
So I got to bring this up. So while we're on Nepenthe, okay, of course, we meet Riker and Troy's daughter. They keep calling her the wild girl of the woods. And she's sort of out having sort of this adventure. And she's got a bow and arrow. And I guess she's hunting rabbits or something like that, that they actually use for this pizza they make later in this particular scene. But we see that they're kind of living in the woods and they haven't forsaken technology, but it's almost just like they have a cabin in the woods and they're kind of away from it. It seems like most of the Enterprise crew that we've come to know and love so far, they're all just off away from everything. And then we find out that they had a child, a son that basically had died, and that I guess somehow a positronic matrix of some kind could have been used in order to help manufacture a vaccine or a cure that could have actually saved their son's life. And then, of course, when synths and synth research and everything was banned because of the attack on Mars, they're not able to have access to these facilities or whatever, so that basically a cure could happen. This particular planet, Nepenthe, has amazing regenerative capabilities. So they came to this planet in the hopes, and I assume that maybe Riker discovered this planet while he and Troy were on board, you know, his ship. You know, maybe that's how they knew about this planet. They don't say that, but in my mind, I was thinking maybe that's why they knew about it. But they come to this planet because of its amazing regenerative properties in the hopes that it'll save their son. It doesn't work. Their son dies. And they're basically just there trying to figure out what they're going to do. And here's the thing. So Picard and Soji arrive. Picard and Soji are having issues. And there's this scene where Soji is kind of acting out and Picard kind of takes the brunt of her anger or whatever she's dealing with. And then they start this whole conversation about parenting. And they tell Picard the reason he doesn't know how to relate to Soji is because he doesn't understand what it means to be a parent. He's never had a kid. Teenagers are the worst, blah, 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 whatever. Okay, so Inner Light, okay? One of the greatest next-gen episodes of all time that people just constantly go on about. I love Inner Light. It's not one of my favorites. People love Inner Light. The one with the flute, okay? The one with
that's
the flute.
One of my favorite Star Trek episodes of all time of any Star Trek. I love that episode. And I relate to that episode very well, actually.
Did he not have children in that episode? Was not the point of that?
And even a daughter. And even a daughter. Yep.
Okay. Yes. Okay. How is it that Picard doesn't understand how to relate to children at all when basically, according to Inner Light, not only did he have, because he had a son, I think, and a daughter, didn't he?
But we need to set up the scene here, too, because I think the scene that you're really talking about and the one that really upset me was Soji believes this might all be an illusion, which, by the way, these guys are not following their own continuity. And I always say this. Continuity is the enemy of lazy writers. Dodge immediately felt safe with Picard because of her failsafe program. Soji should have the same damn failsafe program, and this shouldn't even be an issue. That's why I'm saying this was a forced narrative. It was put in there to get the legacy characters on. Katie had a comment here where she says, Shaban and Kurtzman put in Riker for a fan boost. The legacy characters are clearly shown for ratings, and that's what I think. And I think this proves it because they're not following their own continuity. Dodge was very comfortable with Picard because she was programmed to be that way. Why would her sister be any different? Doesn't make any sense. And you talked about the stuff with Inner Light. There's that scene where there's actually a good scene between Soji and Troy. Soji's explaining the problem that she has, okay, which again, does not consistent with what her sister did, but at least she's explaining the problem, right? Troy's being very sympathetic and listening and all that stuff. And then Picard just comes in and kind of just, he's just a dick. He's just a dick for no reason. He comes in and just says, yep, that's right. We're just trying to kill you. And then Soji even assaults him. She actually pushes the old man, which I'm just like, oh my God. You know what I mean? If I was Riker, I would have smacked that girl in the face. The guy's like 100 years old. You know what I mean? You're not going to get away with that. Now, granted, she is a synth and she could kill all of them. And they even make that point. Right. She could easily kill them all. But still, it's like, this is too much. This is really too much. And treating Picard, literally, that's, I feel like, how he's treated on the show. He is just a pathetic old man. Push him out of the way. You know what I mean? It's like showing what the whole show is, you know? And I really hated that scene. And then Troy comes. And it's very obvious because she's on an elevated platform. They do a very specific angle. Picard's sort of cowering, and she lectures him about what a dick he is and how he doesn't know how to relate to children. And again, getting back to your thing, what the hell happened to Inner Light? One of the most beloved TNG episodes ever.
That's the thing that kills me. Because I'm like sitting here going, okay, Inner Light is one of the, and on many lists, it is the most popular next generation episode, period. For a lot of people, that is number one. That's like City on the Edge of Forever for original series. Okay. It's up there. Everyone knows, well, not everyone, but all diehard Star Trek fans have seen Inner Light. Everyone I know anyway, loves that episode. The flute went for a bunch of money when they did the auction, you know. It is a highly, highly celebrated episode of Next Generation. It's a very, very important episode for Picard. And I'm like going, so that didn't happen? Like, I don't understand this. How do you as a writer writing that scene just forget about Inner Light? Just totally forget about it. Because that's what they had to do. They had to totally forget about Inner Light to write that scene. I was sitting on my couch and I was really seething going, are you kidding me? I'm happy to see Troy and Riker, but it's like, no one's going to bring up the fact. It's like, don't you, like, even if Picard doesn't understand how to relate to her because he's become a hermit and a curmudgeon or whatever. Okay. You would have thought that when Troy started her thing, she could have said, I would have thought you would have remembered what you'd learned about children when you had your incident. And then she could lecture him. How about one line? How about one line that establishes the previous continuity? One line. That's it.
I know.
That's how they fix this stuff. Just throw in one friggin' line. That's it. That's all. And I've been like, oh, yeah. Okay, well, maybe because he's been off in his vineyard and he hates people and he's just got his Romulan super spies and they're making wine. Maybe he's forgotten how to relate to not only the children, but people in general. Wow, that kind of sucks.
The other thing about this that I really hate is the implication that Picard has not been continuing his relationship with the Rikers. When he meets their daughter, she doesn't run up and say, like, Uncle Picard and hug him. In fact, she's kind of a dick to him. You know what I mean? She talks about this Captain Crandall, which actually some fans are interested in who Captain Crandall is. So there's a lot of name dropping of that character, enough that I even remember the name. I never remember anybody's name. And she talks about Captain Crandall. Oh, he's even older than Picard. I mean, she's just right off the bat. She's already being condescending to him. There's no love there. You know what I mean? I did like that Troy, the first thing she does is hug Picard. I mean, that was nice. I mean, that was good. At least that was a good reaction. It was kind of negated by the lecture later, where she's standing over the pathetic old man who's just been assaulted, by the way. He was just pushed. Yeah. And she's doing this to him. You know, I don't know. I have to say, again, you know, we've been talking about, I think a theme here is missed opportunities. There were some really good opportunities to really make this shine. But I do think, just looking at their own continuity in the show, this clearly was just sandwiched in and didn't have anything to do with the rest of the narrative. And they just threw it in there because they knew they kind of had to. And again, okay. that Ready Room interview, Frakes says, when he was directing on set, episode 4 and 5, those are the episodes he was directing, he did not know he was going to be in this show. What does that tell you? They just threw it in there. You know, that wasn't part of the plan. The plan, in fact, and in that same interview, Brent Spiner, he talks about that Patrick Stewart actually had a dinner with all his old castmates and told them, none of you were on the show. And that included Brent Spiner, who did come on the show. And I'm just like, right. What a dick move. You know what I mean? Like, that's just like, what? You know, it wasn't like, hey, I'm fighting for you guys. Don't worry. We're going to get you in here at some point. We're hoping for additional seasons. Don't worry, we'll get to you eventually. No, he told them, none of you are going to be on the show. And it was apparently a lie, because Brent Spiner then got a call, he said, from mm-hmm. Kurtzman and Akiva, and they offered him a part on the show. It's just amazing what's going on behind, I would just love to know what's really going on behind the scenes with this stuff. I would love to be somewhere, even if it was just as a grip, just as a fly on the wall, just listening to all this stuff, you know, because I think it's just a big mess.
Here's the thing that kills me, okay? If they had no intention of putting this, you know, Little House on Nepenthe scene, you know, into it, why couldn't you just pull back and reveal that they're on a holodeck on a ship? Like, why can't you at least, if you're going to give us fan service, can you, like, put it on a plate with some garnish and make it look pretty? You know, well,
And I want to point this out. I have an article, we may get to it during the news segment. Excuse me. Where Siobhan talks about how, because this narrative has been coming from the production team like crazy. And they're like, we're only going to use the characters, the legacy characters, if they really fit the narrative, they're really important. What did Troy and Riker actually do in this episode besides massive fan service? How did they really contribute to the story in any real shape or form? This is just like a little side quest. That's all it is. You know, they had to invent this whole thing with, like, Soji being distrustful of Picard, even though her that shouldn't be because of the programming. And we saw that her sister wasn't, you know what I mean? But we kind of invented this whole thing, invented a problem so we could get them on the show. And I'm just like, just be honest that this was just complete and total fan service. Hey, I'm happy it wasn't a cameo. I'm happy that there was some substance in what they were talking about in terms of some actual real interaction. We don't just see them for one scene and they're gone. But don't. I think the producers are so disingenuous about what they're doing. It infuriates me. It really does. Because there's a lot of fans that believe them. And I don't know why, but they do. And then they're going to come and troll you, like, on the internet because you're pointing out these things. You know what I mean? And it just infuriates me, you know?
So continuing our writer's room, let me just go ahead. Let me explain. I'm going to jump to my wannabe ending of this episode if I were writing it. Okay. So if I were writing this, okay, they would actually need to get on a ship in order to rendezvous with Rios. Okay. And they would go to this spaceport with this captain, whatever, that Riker clearly doesn't like, shows up every once in a while. The ship shows up, the doors open, Picard and Soji are going across the little plank or the little air dock or whatever. They get there, the other doors open, the guy turns around and says, "I hear you need a ride," and it's Q. That's how I would have ended this episode. Now, they're not going to go anywhere near that, but I mean, you know, if we're going to do fan service, cool, can we at least do it right? Because then you could have got Picard's reaction. It's like, oh, no. But if Picard needs help, who better to basically help him out than Q? Yeah. That would have, like, I tell you, this show could be so awesome. And here's the thing that gets me. It's like they want it to be Logan, but they don't understand what Logan did well. Like, they don't get it. They don't understand what made Logan so great. They've got the downbeat going, but there's no upswing. You know, yeah, there's no awesome scene. You know, there's no, oh, that's amazing. You know, for example, you know, in Logan, spoiler alert, when Professor X dies in Logan, he's killed by a clone of Wolverine. What is it, the X-24 or whatever? Like, that's amazing. That's an awesome, shocking scene.
I've never seen Logan, by the way, so thanks for that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. All right, sorry. But the point being is that at least that death is like, oh, and it's amazing and it's shocking and it leads to a fight, like a really amazing fight. And it's like, oh, you know, like, so if you're going to give us the death of great characters like Hugh, and, you know, and all these other things, it's like, if you've got to do it, if you're going to do the downbeat, at least do it with class. Like if Hugh had died fighting against the Romulans.
I think it's very telling that the one character that I'm seeing, like, universally, people are like, what a Trek moment with Hugh, with the Borg Reclamation Project, all that kind of stuff. Almost universally, everybody liked that. Even people that don't like the show are like, that was great. That's Trek. And what do? We kill him in like the second scene of the next episode, you know, immediately. As an afterthought.
Yeah. And in my version, Hugh lives, the Borg uprise, and he does use the line.
Oh, I love your version.
Beautiful. And in the next episode, we watch the Borg evict the Romulans forcibly.
I love your version. We're a little backed up on comments. Katie had some great comments. Right. And this one from earlier, because I didn't catch this. Katie, you have a great eye for detail. When we were talking about Agnes, she said she purposely took the potion to spit up the tracker. When that happened, the next scene showed Narek losing the signal. And I didn't notice that. And that does make sense. Well, I think that's part of the reason that she's killing herself also is the idea is that we don't know exactly how that pill worked. I remember that she specifically had to chew it, which I thought was interesting, instead of just swallow it. You would think with like she would just swallow it. And they said she had to chew it, which to me would kind of imply that it kind of like gets absorbed into her body and she couldn't just throw it up. But as she died, that might have an effect on it. So I don't know. But I didn't catch the fact that Narek's tracker lost the signal. I didn't catch that. So if that's the case, it makes sense. I didn't catch that. And then she also said Siobhan answered on IG about the C7 relationship, which is Chakotay and Seven and Janeway. And he said, and he's quoting the IG article, that was a long time ago. And then Janeway didn't have good character growth in 7 years. Boo. He said Spot the Cat was a long time ago. The way they're treating the previous episodes, the previous incarnations, is bad. We actually talked in a previous episode, we talked a little bit about why does it seem so much of the modern legacy media, when you're talking about Star Wars, Star Trek, I think any franchise right now where they're rebooting or remaking, they always have to act like the newest incarnation is the best. And Next Generation never did that. Next Generation never tried to be the best Trek. It tried to be Trek. It tried to be its own Trek and also be respectful to the original Trek. And there was never this like this blatant thing on the show where they're like, oh, yeah, we're way better than Kirk. You know what I mean? We're way better than. And there wasn't anything from the producers that ever said that. Gene didn't go around saying, well, Next Gen's much better than the original series or anything like that. That was not a thing. You know, now, anytime something new comes out, it always seems like you have to say, well, this new version and our new characters are better than the old character. And I'm sick of that because these people are literally standing on the shoulders, you know, of giants. And they are getting attention, they're getting money, they're getting all this stuff because they're using the name, deliberately using the name. And then they're even going to go so far to say, yeah, our stuff is better. It's like the thing with Kurtzman where he said that those nuns, those warrior nuns, were the best fighters in the universe. The best fighters in the universe, okay? That's the kind of attitude that these people have, and I have a real problem with it. And I don't understand fans that are okay with it either. It's like, it's okay to be excited. If you like the show, that's okay. It's okay to disagree about a show. And if you really like it, that's fine. But don't come to me and tell me the original Trek sucked or Next Generation sucked. Meanwhile, some of these people, they'll be sitting there talking about, well, Next Gen wasn't that great, blah, blah, blah. And then the next post will be like, oh, wasn't that so cool seeing Riker and Troy and Picard together? It's like no matter what is spewed to them, they just regurgitate it, you know?
All I could think of is that when they originally did Next Gen, the idea with Riker's character is that Riker's character was going to be the Kirk kind of character, you know, and we were going to see him kind of growing and developing and eventually growing into command. But that was the point of Riker's character, that he was the cat. He was going to be the Jim Kirk type of character on the show. And all I could think of is how different, you know, because of the writers of Picard, how completely different this version of Riker is, because when they were relaying the whole story about what happened with their son, all I could hear is what Kirk's response would be. The answer is no. I am therefore going anyway. So yeah. It kind of shows you how far they've gotten from what the original vision for these characters are. And that's not a problem necessarily, as long as they're in a good show and they still kind of show respect for what's come before. But it seems to me they're disregarding a lot of things, just an awful lot of stuff. And I tell you right now,
they're trying to reinvent the franchise. And that's very clear. They are not trying to, they're trying to use what came before to sell their product, okay? But without any of the respect for that original product, because they're trying to remake everything. They're just trying to make it in their own image, in their own depressed, depraved, mentally ill, you know, kind of world that they live in, and just force it on everybody else using the brand.
But let me point something out though. But here's the sad thing about it. They are using the legacy of Next Gen to sell a new product. But when I look at this show is missing all the trappings of the fun things that people like to have. You know, there's no really awesome new uniforms. We hardly see them. There's no new comm badges. I haven't seen any new phasers of any kind. There's no new starships. We've got the one ship that they're flying around on, the La Siena. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly. But it's like, there's just not all that fun. Like, for example, sitting right here. Okay, here's a product. They sold me on this. Here's Kirk. Okay, I've got a con. I've got a bunch of stuff. You know, here's a fun Star Trek thing that I bought. You know, I love this uniform, you know. But the thing that kills me about this show is if they're using this legacy of Next Gen to sell something, what are they selling? I don't know what they're selling because they're not selling fun new uniforms. They're not selling fun new props. They're not selling fun new starships. They're not. I don't know what they're selling.
It's been widely reported that the licensees are not happy with this show at all. In fact, that's why they say a lot of the reworking was done, because the licensees just were like, we can't sell any of this stuff. You know what I mean? We can't sell any of this stuff. There's a funny scene in the Ready Room where Wil Wheaton is interviewing the actor who plays Elnor. And Wil Wheaton, you know, being how he is, he's all like, oh, you realize you're going to be an action figure. And I wanted to say, like, no, he's not.
No, he's not.
You are so deluded, man. You are so deluded. He's not going to be no action figure. You know, maybe like for like a real custom, you know, like basically a custom kind of thing. Yeah, there we go. There's an action figure, right? I don't know. It boggles my mind what they're doing. I don't know. Aghast. I'm kind of like almost speechless. Star Trek Picard, Prison Break. And Katie, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what else to say. It's just like, I think this just could have been done a lot better. And I think the best part of the episode, I think, was very obviously forced into the narrative. And it just doesn't really fit. It's like a puzzle piece that just kind of jammed in there. You know what I mean? To get it to fit, you know. And then meanwhile, like I said, it's just so dark and depressing. You know, Agnes, or that's her name, right? The scientist girl. She was like the comedy relief of the first couple episodes. And now she's like committing suicide. You know what I mean? Like, come on, guys. Who are you guys, like, that mentally ill? This is the way you write? You know what I mean? Because that's what that is. That's literally mental illness, you know? So it's like, what are you guys doing? What are you trying to accomplish here? You know, except to make your audience go crazy along with you because you're crazy, you know? So I don't know. I will say this. At least in the preview, did you see the preview for next week's episode at the end?
I did see the preview. I'm excited for the preview because I'm about ready to watch someone kick some butt. I am about ready to see, like, after what happened to Hugh, I want to see someone pay these Romulans back like there's no end in sight. And so I'm very excited.
And actually rescue somebody. Wouldn't it be nice to actually see one of our heroes rescue somebody? Which it does look like we're going to see that Seven's going to return and she's going to save Elnor because he got left behind, which is also messed up. Why did they leave him behind? I still don't understand why they didn't just go through the portal with Picard and Soji. I still don't understand that. The writing in here is bad. I mean, it's bad, you know, and it doesn't make any sense that they wouldn't just go with them, especially with what happened. But I will say with the preview coming up, it looks like we will have the return of Seven. And at least it looks like she's going to save Elnor. Now, that could go completely haywire with this show. Who knows? That's what it looks like. And if that's what happens, well, that's good. At least we have a legacy character doing something and saving another character.
So I just want to point out, for those of you watching right now, if I had written this episode, the next episode, you would have been treated to a scene of Elnor, Hugh, and the XBs, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 style, taking back the Borg cube.
Yeah. And Katie, she actually has recently watched the Dark Crystal, Rise of the Resistance. I saw her talking about that on Twitter. And she said, Eric, I know you saw Dark Crystal on Netflix. We actually did review Dark Crystal, Rise of the Resistance on a previous episode. Are those episodes available on Anchor now? That one in particular?
Yes, Dave? Yes, it is on Anchor, yes.
So we do have a review that's available on Anchor, audio, basically an audio-only version, but she says, check out Crystal Calls. The producer of the series makes a great comment how honoring the traditions of the past and how that makes it work. And I totally agree with you because if anybody who has watched The Dark Crystal, the original film, and then watches Rise of the Resistance, they are honoring that legacy to a T almost. And the thing is, apparently, as I understand it from that documentary, Netflix made that call and decided, you know, because they were actually pitching like a CG animated version. And Netflix said, you know what? Can we just bring the puppets back? Can we just do the puppets? Because that's what we all love. Let's do the puppets. Right. We've got tons of money. Right. We've got tons of freaking money. We're burning through it. We're going into debt. Let's just do the puppets. You know what I mean? And that's kind of a cool thing about Netflix, that Netflix has the money to do that because they are throwing so much money at their content, at creating content. But yeah, Age of Resistance is done so much better. And you know, I think of the characters, like the characters that return, like for instance, like the Chamberlain. My daughter loves the Chamberlain. The Chamberlain is just like such an interesting character to her because he's so wormy and just like, And it's the same character as in Dark Crystal. They didn't change him at all. And they made a much bigger, more expansive story, much bigger scale. There's like battles in Age of Resistance. There's all sorts of stuff. It's like, it really is like, hey, we're expanding this. We're making it more. And I feel like Picard is contracting it. It's getting small and smaller and smaller. You know what I mean? Because it's an in-depth character study, you know? And it's an in-depth character study on mental illness is what it is to me. That's how I feel right
now. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who it is an in-depth character study of, because it's like, unfortunately for Picard, it's one note. He gave up, he went to the vineyard, and now he's trying to reclaim, but he can't. and that's it. There's your in-depth. I tried. Darn it. Oops. Didn't work out. I'm trying again. Darn it. Oops. It's not working out. There's your whole synopsis right there. Oops. It didn't work out. I tried again. Oops. It's not working out again. Oh, well. Guess it's time to go back to the vineyard again.
I'm kind of curious what Clyde is talking about here. He says, green goo is due. Clyde, if you want to get some clarification on that, I would be curious to know what you're talking about. I really am.
Yeah, Bobby's lost there.
Says, I'm still stuck on the idea of a Raffy figure equipped with a pipe and a pill bottle. Well, with real drug using action.
Like, little arm, you know, like. Yeah. Well, if they do make a Raffy figure, Eric, we could have a special 4th of July episode where we blow it up with some fireworks. Maybe we'll strap a couple bottle rockets to it, send it up into the sky, and there you go.
Well, we do try to end on a positive note and try to give something to our viewers. So, Katie, I know she's a huge Seven fan. Voyager's your favorite Trek. Says Seven, the She-Wolf, right? That's the Rangers. Fenris Rangers. Seven, the She-Wolf, hugs Elnor. Good moment. However, I predict Seven will be the martyr, giving her life to the name of humanity. She will activate the queen cell, masking her life signs as a Borg queen. That's quite a prediction, actually. There's a lot there. There was a thing where he was talking about the queen cell and that if he could get there and sort of activate the defenses, it sounded like, and all that kind of stuff, that he could obviously turn the tables. So will Seven do that? And in doing so, will she lose her life? We'll have to see. It would be kind of neat if she did do that, if she did activate the queen cell, as it were, and activated the cube and turned the tables on the Romulans. But I'm not holding my breath for it. I'm not holding my breath for it.
Yeah. We'll see. Well, you know, and here's the thing, okay? They don't have a lot more episodes to change my opinion, but I'm going to tell you right now, so far I like Star Trek Discovery better. Whew. There you go. Oh, I like Discovery better. Wow. Discovery is at least more fun.
That's a bombshell.
I'm sorry. I really liked Pike in the second season. I had a lot of fun with that. There's all these really fun callbacks to original series episodes. I enjoyed the design of the new Enterprise.
And you're all stoked about the destruction of the Federation and all that kind of stuff. That's awesome, huh?
Woo. No.
That Picard is setting us up for. Obviously, Soji is going to be the destroyer of worlds. He's going to destroy the Federation. That's why the Federation's destroyed in Discovery. I mean, come on. You guys can't see that coming? I mean, come on.
I know it's where it's going. All I'm saying is, like, if I have to take this first season of Picard and put it up against Discovery Season 2, I prefer Discovery Season 2.
Wow.
I'm looking forward to Season 3. And I have this weird feeling like at least Season 3 is going to be more hopeful because at least they're going to be trying to put the Federation back together in some form.
Well, my question is why? We see in Picard that the Federation is corrupt, that the Starfleet has turned their back. They're no longer Starfleet, to quote Picard. Why? Why bring the Federation back?
Well, here's one of the fun things about Discovery. Okay, Discovery Season 1. Okay, if anyone hasn't seen Star Trek Discovery Seasons 1 and 2, I'm about to go into some spoilers, okay? So be warned.
You're just spoiling everything tonight, aren't you, man?
That's me. I'm trying to make Trek great again. Give me a break. All right, so here's the deal. In Star Trek Discovery Season 1, okay, it turns out that their captain, who they're following, turns out that he's not a very good guy. He's actually a very evil guy, and they get betrayed. And it doesn't go very well for them. Okay, they do kind of end up winning the day, but at the same point, kind of their faith and command structure and Federation and Starfleet is shaken a little bit because how did this guy wind up in command of this ship? Look at all these awful things that happen. Season 2 starts off with Pike coming on board the Discovery, taking command and telling everyone, I am not Lorca. I am not Lorca. And all of the Season 2, he's constantly reminding people what Starfleet stands for and what their responsibilities and what they should strive for as a Starfleet officer. Pike, in a lot of ways, in Season 2, idealizes a lot of the higher ideals of Trek. And he's constantly reminding people of what Starfleet stands for. And that's one of the things I loved about Pike. That's one of the things that kind of won me over to his side. And then by the end of season two, that's kind of the overall narrative is, you know, we are Starfleet. We can be better than this. We're going to come together. I mean, it just, I'm just going to tell you, it's like, I prefer seeing them start off in a dark place and end on a hopeful note like they did in Discovery, as opposed to where we're going. Like, I mean, I guess they might end on a hopeful note. I don't know where they're going with this. So there you go. I'm just telling you right now, if I had to pick to rewatch some episodes of Picard season one or Discovery season two, I'll watch Discovery season two. I've actually watched quite a few of those episodes off and on. So there's where I'm feeling right now. Producers of Picard, you've got a couple episodes left. Let's see what you got. But right now, I think I like Discovery better.
I have another comment. Dan Stevens, he says, we must rebuild it better than it was before. Keep the good. Fix what was broken. That's how you reach for utopia, right? Well, Dan, I think that's actually not a bad point. I mean, I do think it would be nice to make it better. But I also think better is also somewhat of a subjective term. So I don't think it necessarily has to be better. I would like it to be as good right now is what I would like. I don't necessarily need it to be better. I would like it to be as, you know what I would really like? I would like it to be enjoyable for me. That's what I would like. That's all I really want. I just want it to be something that I can sit down and enjoy. You know, a lot of people talk about this. Patrick Stewart talked about this, and this really gets to me. You know, I have a background in public safety. I was in public safety for 20 years. Patrick Stewart talked about a story of one of the reasons he decided to do Picard again was because a detective in Las Vegas reached out to him with like a fan letter and talked about, you know, in my profession, I see some really, really bad things. I see some really terrible things. And what I love is being able to go home, put on an episode of Next Generation, and know everything's going to be okay, that our future is bright, our future is good, and that really resonates with me. And Patrick Stewart said that really touched me. What is he doing in this show? Because you know what, that detective, I would love to know who that detective is and reach out to him, because I don't think he's watching this show, and if he is, I don't think he's getting the same reaction. I really don't. I really right. don't. Because it's not something you're going to want. After a long shift, I would not want to watch Star Trek Picard. After a long shift, being on the street and all that kind of stuff, I would not want to watch Star Trek Picard. Katie says she hasn't really seen Disco, being truthful. I'm not a huge radical woke person. However, Pike is a captain. And she said, hit it.
Yeah, hit so. It. That's right. I see, that's the thing. For me, that's the thing. I mean, I really loved Anson Mount as Pike. He had some really great scenes where he talked about what Starfleet represents. The first time he comes on board the Discovery, they actually pull up his personnel file, and he's very candid and open. And there's just something, and I enjoyed watching Discovery just to see what Pike was doing. That's how much I loved his portrayal of Pike.
Well, I like Anson Mount. I used to watch Hell on Wheels. Did you ever watch
Hell on Wheels? Is a great show. It was a great show.
So I think Anson Mount is a great actor. But I saw the first episode of the second season because that was available on YouTube for free. And I just really didn't like it. I didn't necessarily dislike Anson Mount. I will say one thing that irritates me is how many Spocks do we need? How many Spocks do we want? I mean, this we're on like our fourth Spock now, technically, because there was also a kid Spock, you know? And I get to the point where I'm like, you know, why wouldn't, you know, if you want to do that, why not do, here's my little pitch for you. If you wanted to do that, the way I would have done it is don't have Spock. Have the Enterprise before Spock was even on the ship. And let's go with number one and Pike because we never saw much of them. You know what I mean? And let's do a show where they're heavily involved. We don't need to bring Spock back. But of course they had to because Michael Burnham is Spock's sister. You know what I mean? And stuff like that, which is, to me, that's one of the things that gets fans infuriated. It's like, that's ridiculous to begin with. You know what I mean? You've already lost me, you know? But my thing is, you could have focused on the Enterprise even before Spock with Pike. And that could have been interesting to me as a fan. You know what I mean? I don't really need another version of Spock because Nimoy is always going to be the best to me. I'm never really going to get over that. You know, I kind of accepted Quinto because of Nimoy's blessing, because Nimoy was actually involved with the JJ Trek, with the Kelvin verse. So I was able, there was a sort of passing of the torch literally going on. But like, how many Spocks do you want? How many Spocks do we need? You know, at some point it gets ridiculous. I mean, right now we've got a movie version Spock and we've got a TV version Spock, and then we got a kid Spock. And it's like, how many Spocks do you want? You know, that's my thing.
Well, here's the thing that I, again, for me, if they do an Enterprise, they do a Pike show, I'm very excited about Rebecca Romijn as number one. I really liked her as number one. I like Anson Mount as Pike. And I love that redesign of the Enterprise. Like I would like to see that. I feel like it's like,
okay, you're not alone. There's a lot of buzz saying that is going to happen. There's a lot of buzz saying they are finally kind of getting that, and they are going to probably do something like that.
We need a classic, old school, fun space adventure Star Trek show. You've given us all this other stuff. Just give us just a straight up fun, old school space adventure show.
But I have to seriously ask you, do you really think it's going to turn out the way you're thinking? The way you're hoping, if they did a Pike show, do you really think it's going to turn out that way? Or it's going to be Pike is a drug addict and you know, number one is like a sex addict, and Spock is mentally ill, right? Spock is mentally ill in the Discovery version, right? He was in a straitjacket and all that kind of stuff.
That way, yeah, because he
can't. So that's my point. Is it really going to be the way you're thinking? That's my question. You know what I mean? I don't think so. I really don't think so.
Here's what you forget, okay? You and I are working on this thing that we can't talk about yet, okay? But when that thing comes out, okay, they're going to see it and they're going to be like, you know what? These guys would be perfect for our Pike show. They understand how to do fun space adventure. We need to get them. We are going to be the showrunners of this Pike show, and it's going to kick ass.
All right.
I'll take a swing at it.
I can't do worse. There's no way I could do worse. I just don't feel like I could. I say that boldly and confidently. I don't think I could do any worse.
I do
film producing, which is much less resources than these people do. Okay. And it's not saying it's the same quality. It's impossible with those kinds of numbers and things like that. But man, with all that talent and all the people that I could bring to the table for something like that, I think I could do a much better job. I'll just say it, you know?
You know who I think would be someone amazing to bring on into a Star Trek writer's room is the guy that wrote Galaxy Quest. He gets it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's people there who could do this. I mean, it's not that difficult.
I don't know what part Katie was reacting to, but she said that's so true. And she said, can we have a baby seven, a child Janeway? You know, an old Quark.
Why not?
That would be kind of nice. Let's have baby seven. Like we actually gave some pretty good reviews of The Mandalorian. You know what I mean? I love baby Yoda. I'm a big baby Yoda fan. Maybe that's what Trek needs right now. Let's have a baby seven or something like that. Old Quark, you know, that. I kind of like that too.
he could be like Quill. I have spoken. I have gambled.
Dan Stevens says that hopefulness was my favorite part of TNG. The characters reached for a better universe. I only ever watched the OG and TNG with my dad and Janeway in college. TNG was my favorite, and I was looking forward to watching Picard with my dad again. The fun hopefulness is why he and I enjoyed the Orville. And by the way, Dan, I've talked about before, I feel like there's this real, this isn't your dad's Trek vibe that comes from New Trek. And that's what I call it, New Trek. A lot of people call it New Trek. That's with an New Trek. And I feel like there's this very powerful vibe of this isn't your father's Trek. And I grew up watching Trek with my father. My father is the one who got me into Star Trek. We watched the original series. And then when the Next Generation came out, we watched it first run together. It's like, I think my dad, if he watched this stuff, would just be like, this is garbage. You know what I mean? This is just complete, utter garbage. And that's what they're going for. But for me, that doesn't help my Trek experience. My Trek experience began with my dad. I would want him to like it. I get that vibe too, Dan.
Let me throw this out there too.
He liked Katie's idea also.
Yeah. My wife sent me a little it was a little meme something about, you know, it's Baby Yoda and he's holding like a gun and it says, I hope the coronavirus turns everyone into zombies so I can use my skilly skills. So see, I grew up watching Star Trek with my mom. My mom loves Star Trek. She still loves Star Trek. And my connection to Star Trek goes so deep. I've had a professional career as an illustrator and a graphic designer. And that came from being inspired, watching my mom paint Spock while we watched Star Trek together when I was a child. Like my whole career, like how much I love art and all that, like all this stuff, it comes from that moment, because watching my mom paint and create art while we were watching Star Trek is what inspired me to want to draw in the first place. So I have a very deep and important connection to Trek. And I know my mom loves Star Trek. So for me, it's like, it's not my mom's Star Trek. I mean, it's like, I don't know who, I know there's people that like Picard, okay? And there are things that I've enjoyed about some of the episodes I've seen. But on a whole, I don't know how inspired I'm going to be to watch season two, if there is a season. I know they've already greenlit it or whatever. You know, by the time that we get to the end of this, they've got to give me one heck of a pitch to bring me on for season two. You know, I enjoyed the twist and discovery, and I was curious to see what they were going to do with season two. And then when they released that trailer with Pike, I was like going, how in the world are they going to do that? That makes no friggin' sense. So I watched season two sort of like going, there's no way this is going to work. And then I just fell in love with Pike and number one, the redesign of the Enterprise and the hopeful idea that Pike represents, because that's classic Trek. That's why I like season two. At the end of the day, Pike's message is there and it's classic Trek. And that's what I liked about that. But this show's got to somehow pull it out of the flames, because right now, I don't know. I don't know about renewing CBS All Access after this. I don't know. I didn't care for a lot of the short Trek stuff. I mean, I kind of want to watch season three, but I'm going to tell you right now, if Picard ends on a super mega down note, I might just be like, eh.
You know, at this point, the only new Trek I'm really hoping will be kind of fun is Lower Decks, because I know that is going to be a comedic take on the Trek world. I saw their panel at Star Trek Vegas, and they mentioned the main showrunner mentioned that he made his writers, a lot of them who were not Trek people, he made them watch the Star Trek Next Generation episode Lower Decks. So
yeah, it's a great episode,
which I thought was kind of neat. It's a great episode, and I just like the whole idea of this B team, like the whole specialty of their specialty is second contact. You know, yeah, there has to be someone that does that. So their specialty is second. And I thought that's funny. That made me laugh immediately, you know. So I would like to laugh. I would like to have some fun with Trek again, you know, and not just be depressed and seeing people, you know, drug addicted and seeing people kill themselves and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, there were people that watched Trek to deal with depression because it helps them get away. If you have depression, don't watch this show. I'm telling you right now, do not watch this show, because it's going to send you right over the edge. You're going to go right off the cliff. You know what I mean, when you watch this.
Okay, you know? I'm going to call out Micah's comment, because there you go.
Love is
blind.
If we're watching Picard, when can we use that time to watch Love is Blind? I don't know Love is Blind. What is Love is Blind?
Okay, so Love is Blind is this Netflix reality TV series that seems a little scripted, where they take these different people and they go into these little pod-like rooms, and it's kind of like they're getting to know each other. And then if they make a connection, the idea is they propose to one of them without actually seeing them. Then they come out of the pod, they spend some time together, and then theoretically they do or do not get married. I will tell you this. Unfortunately, Micah, you're right. Love is Blind was probably more compelling than some of these episodes of
Well,
I'm just telling you, CBS, you guys, I don't know what in the world you guys are trying to do. It's leaving me totally cold. I love the first episode with Data. There's been some fun things. I still think the first episode is the high watermark. We had that fun action scene with Dodge. I kind of like Dodge.
It kind of all goes downhill after the first scene. This entire series, after the first scene, it's just kind of like,
And there was some things about this episode that I really liked, but then there's some stuff about it that I dislike so much. I don't know. I don't know.
Katie has an interesting perspective. She's younger than us, and she did mention that she says, I actually introduced my mother to Trek when I was 18. It breaks my heart for this show to be so dark and un-Trek that she doesn't want to see it. And I don't really want her to watch it. And Katie's a young adult. So it's like, that says something. And she's the one who got her mom into it because her mom wasn't a Trekkie. And she got into it, you know? I don't want my dad to watch this either. I wouldn't subject my dad to this. And my dad's is frail, and he lives in a nursing home, and you know, he's over 80 years old. There's no way I'm going to show him this. It's going to make him, he's just going to give up on life. You know what I mean? There's no way he's going to try to give him something hopeful, something that he likes, something that puts a smile on his face. You know, I don't know. I just don't understand it. I really don't. And like I said, well, you paid more attention to it than I thought regarding Love is Blind.
I'm sorry. It is, that was more compelling television than Picard. It, you know, at least I was generally going, I have no idea where this is going.
Well, I think we've beaten Picard to death at this point. So,
yeah.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and Find the Live Show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.